Andy Scheckman, president of Miles Franklin Limited. That's your go-to place for numismatics and gold bullion. Welcome back, Andy Scheckman.
Hey, thanks, Chris. It's always great to be with you.
Yeah, it's really good to have you back. And speaking of being back from the World Series, Game 1, Boston, of course, nearly swept the series. Give us an idea on the World Championship game and what you thought of Game 1.
Well, you know, I'm a baseball fanatic, have been my entire life. It probably meant more to me than just about anything outside of family my entire life. Fenway was always on the bucket list, and we, Bill Holter and I, sat just a few rows away from the Green Monster. And if it weren't for the fact that it was 40 degrees and raining prior to the game, so I was wet and cold, I don't think anything could have detracted from it. It's an amazing experience to be in a place like Fenway, a place where, you know, so many of the greats have played. I will say this, though. I'll tell you, it's not an inexpensive endeavor to go see a World Series game. You're talking to sit in left field in the corner. You're talking $1,200 a ticket, cheapest you can find anywhere. So it was kind of those once in a life bucket list type of deals that we were excited to do. And
that's not just walking around money. That's one single gold eagle to sit in those seats.
Makes you think about it. It really does. And it makes you think strongly about it, as a matter of fact, and if it's even sustainable going forward for a sporting event.
What I didn't ask you was who you were rooting for.
I'm an American League diehard. I have to go with Boston, absolutely. Being in Minnesota and Minnesota Twins fan, you got to stick with the American.
Well, that certainly worked out well for you then this year with, of course, Boston clinching the World Championship.
But I'll tell you, they're a heck of a squad and a heck of a team. And, you know, there's no question that in baseball, money can certainly buy you a championship. They were a fun team to watch all year long. It's one of those deals where it just seems every year those teams like the Red Sox and the Yankees find their way to the very end, and this is one of the years where they were able to finish it.
There's an interesting story around the Red Sox. For folks into quantitative mathematics, the owner, at least for about a decade at least, he was using statistical and computer modeling, sabermetrics, to set up the best players at any given time on the field for his team, and it actually had paid dividends.
Baseball is a game of statistics and law of average.
I think really when you run the numbers, you know, you run the regression analysis, you start to see statistics pop up.
I'll say one last thing about it. The more you look at the world, the more you'll find mathematics come into play. Whether it be business or sports, mathematics finds its way into the discussion, and I think you can certainly find that in baseball. And it was awesome to be there. It was even better to be there with Bill Holter, and I appreciate you bringing that up. So
over to the markets. You know, interesting week. Last week we saw the yellow metal move up along with the U.S. dollar. We don't typically see this. I'd like to get your take on the fact that we've got this surprisingly hawkish Fed, their forward guidance. People aren't terribly pleased. Investors aren't really excited about the idea of another year of higher rates. At this point, it really seems to me like it's baked into the market. I mean, investors have a solid feel for what's coming. They're not terribly even interested in what the Fed has to say. And we also see central bankers around the world, you know, the ECB ministers, economic ministers, getting really hawkish in their rhetoric, China and Japan as well. Give us an idea on what you see on a forward basis here.
To me, if we're talking forward basis as it relates to precious metals, I could tell you that in all the years I've been doing this, Chris, I don't know that I've ever been more optimistic, ultimately, just based upon the positioning of the commercial bank traders. And I think that when you take a look at things like interest rates and forward guidance, it certainly is very, very important. There's no question about it. I'm not underplaying that. But to me, the ultimate guidance of the market in precious metals is directed by the most sophisticated, well-funded, well-informed, influential traders on the globe, and that's the commercial banks. And I think that you can throw all the other things out the window, because if you look at the last decade, there has been a discorrelation between logic and outcome, and you can throw every single logical argument out there as to why metals should have and should be climbing and going to the, through the roof, and yet there has been nothing but disappointment and hair pulling when you try to figure out why it hasn't. And when you take, I don't think you need to really look any further than the positioning of the commercial banks. They have been short for the last 50 years. They've been continually short in the precious metals market, other than about three occasions, this being the third. Right now, for the first time that I can remember, really, in forever, and it is only the third time, I believe, in the last 50 years, the commercial banks have turned bullish on paper in the futures market. You have a conglomerate of traders who, for the very first time, I think, have pulled off almost a coup, a short squeeze, if you will, is brewing, and they've hoodwinked technical traders into creating the largest short position the COMEX market has ever seen. So you have the most sophisticated traders on the globe going long on paper, but then you don't have to look any further than the positioning of JP Morgan in their physical market, amassing 800 million ounces of physical silver in their house account, which is eight times what the Hunt brothers tried to corner. It's the largest physical position of silver the world's ever seen at one time, and many, many tens of thousands of ounces of gold. All told, their physical exposure right now is over $50 billion in physicals. And if you go back over the last decade, Chris, you can see very easily that J.P. Morgan, who has been the chief shorter in the market, has not needed the physicals in order to control the price. Perhaps they've been controlling the price in order to accumulate this mammoth, largest physical position the world has ever seen, a physical metal in their house account. So I think when we talk about forward guidance, we can take all the technicals and look at them and appreciate them and understand them, but I don't think you look any further than the positioning of JP Morgan and the other commercial banks who, again, for the third time in 50 years are going long on paper on top of a vastly huge physical position they've already amassed.
Take a look at JP Morgan's balance sheets. They were nearly net short around the time of the Great Recession. I think they saw not only an opportunity, but they saw a weakness. They saw a flaw in their business model, and they knew, hey, look, we've got to do something about this. And now, from what I understand, they've amassed what's probably one of the largest, if not the largest, stockpiles of silver in the world. But, you know, here's an interesting anecdote. Precious metals aficionados might be interested to know. Putin over in Russia is actually the Moscow central bank there. They're actually accumulating and have been accumulating silver now for the first time in decades, along with their gold stockpile. So it's not just J.P. Morgan and Andy Schechtman and Gold Seek Radio that sees the opportunity there. We've had a lot of not so positive comments here on silver relative to gold. People are concerned that during this big run in gold they're expecting, silver might not participate this time. Some of our experts are less excited on the prospects of silver. That hasn't been the case as far as history shows us in the last two big bull markets.
In fact, if you go back to the beginning of time, there's about a 90% correlation in the movement between gold and silver throughout all of time. There are times when one will outperform the other or move without participation of the other, but in general, the magneticism between the two will pull them along. And if we talk about the gold to silver relationship, if someone asked me right now, Chris, what is the best thing I could do right now with my gold and silver portfolio, but I don't want to spend any money, the answer is trading gold for silver. In fact, if you look at over the last 50 years, there's been one brief time in 1993 where that ratio of gold to silver, which is currently about 84 or 85 to 1, was more advantageous. In other words, for those people who aren't quite familiar with the gold to silver ratio, it's just as simple as how many ounces of silver does it take to buy an ounce of gold? Geologically, it's 15.5 times more abundant silver is than gold in the Earth's crust. And probably that's why we have that 16 to 1 ratio that goes back thousands of years. But if you go back 50 years, there's been one time in the last 50 years, in 1993, where you could get more silver for trading your gold. And, you know, I think if you take a look at the average ratio between the two over the last five decades has been roughly 45 to 1. At 85 to 1 right now, and that's probably why you got a lot of people saying that, because it has so vastly underperformed. But You'll take a step back. It's so vastly underperformed, yet J.P. Morgan has amassed 800 million ounces of it in their house account and now is going long on paper. They have used these suppressed prices, the misdirection, if you will, to accumulate the silver, and it frustrates technical analysts who say silver's dead because they look at the technicals. This is called painting the tape. This is called misdirection. This is called getting everyone to look one way while you rob or pillage the physical stockpile and create the largest position in the world. But if you take a look at the opportunity that they have created for us through this misdirection, the anomaly that they have created is a once-in-a-five-decade opportunity to trade gold for silver at 85 to 1. And if nothing else happens but that gold were to fall back to, the gold-silver ratio fall back to its five-decade mean or average, you double the amount of gold you started with by trading back into gold. Playing these ratios is vastly important. And I guess I would simply say this, Chris. I would bet my life that one will not go to the moon without the other. But I take a lot of solace in the fact that J.P. Morgan may be maniacal, but they're very sophisticated, and they are very influential, and they are very well-informed, and they have deep pockets. And to amass 800 million ounces, eight times what the Hunt brothers tried to acquire in 1980, the largest position the world's ever seen, is significant. They believe the price is going higher, and I think you don't do what they say, you do what they do. Forget about technical analysis. That is the biggest, biggest flaw in the argument, is that people are following technical analysis, and the people who are pulling the strings understand that. And if all you do is manipulate the price below moving averages and technical indicators, it gives you the ability to acquire the lion's share of the physicals without competition, to misdirect the public away from and the technical traders away from acquiring silver so that they have the ability to hand over fist, gobble up as much as they want without gaining attention or upsetting the apple cart, if you will.
I mean, I think we probably differ somewhat with technical analysis. I mean, obviously, it gives, if you're a trend follower, fantastic long and short signals. Where investors are confused today is that they've seen, these markets in the doldrums for so long because we have so many money managers and fund managers and institutions and big players who do ride the trends, okay, the themes, and it tends to overshoot on the upside and the downside, and we've certainly seen it on the downside, unfortunately, in our favorite sector. But there's another key change here that I don't know that almost anyone will remember, and that is that we have been in the middle of a secular bull market in bonds, since the end of the last major gold bull market around 1980, arguably even before. And that looks like it may finally, the widowmaker, they call it, be coming to an end now. And if that's the case, you want to talk about an unbelievable potential of influx of funds from non-traditional sources looking for a safe haven. But do you think bond investors, they're not going to be looking for U.S. equities at all-time record highs. They're not going to be interested in the typical investment. They want safety. You can see it right now. They're running to the short end on the U.S. T-bill and T-notes. They're searching for security. What happens when that loses its appeal? There's nowhere to go to. There is no safe haven left but the precious metals.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you could argue that the bond market is the mother of all bubbles, no question about it. And it has kind of appears to have perhaps be on the cusp of running its course. But I do have a hard time believing that they'll let interest rates get out of hand. If you see interest rates move up as to the degree that perhaps some believe they will, it will be perhaps the beginning of the greatest depression of all time. And when you have a $22 trillion debt and $145 trillion in unfunded liabilities, letting interest rates get out of hand is really the beginning of the end. And, people don't quite grasp how big the problem really is, the indebtedness that we have and the alternatives. A trillion seconds ago was 31,688 years ago. The numbers have become big, but you're right. Where are the alternatives? Where do you run if you ultimately seek safety? Certainly, it's not in the equity markets that are trading at record price-to-earnings ratios and paying virtually nothing in terms of a dividend. And when you talk about where people go, I don't know. I think it's currencies certainly aren't the answer. So, yeah, it's to the 6,000-year-old history of of precious metals, and maybe something like our new program, the Tradewind program that we have launched in conjunction with Sprott and Goldcorp, the program at the Royal Canadian Mint that allows no storage fees, no management fees, where gold is held with custody denoted on a distributed ledger and held at the Royal Canadian Mint. So you get someone who comes in with a $100 million bond portfolio wanting to buy gold. It's not outlandish for us to be able to place that on the distributed ledger with the Royal Canadian Mint with no storage or management fees. Market is perhaps getting ready for that type of a situation with all of these new blockchain-based gold programs that will allow for large acquisitions without the typical problems associated with logistics, storage, transportation, etc. Our program with the Royal Canadian Mint, I believe, has addressed that. So we're ready if that happens, Chris, and certainly wouldn't surprise me. The markets have kind of defied gravity and logic for a very, very long time. It would make sense that, you know, I think bottom line is if you go back over the last 30, 40 years, the manipulation, if you will, has not been in the precious metals market. The manipulation has been in the interest rate market. And there's an inverse relationship called Gibson's paradox between interest rates and precious metals. And if you have really low interest rates, which creates a perception of wealth, an illusion of wealth, and things like our 401ks and our homes with easy money and low interest rates, everything levitates. But Gibson's paradox says you have to hold down the price of gold because it's an inverse relationship between real interest rates and gold. So they've got themselves kind of in a little bit of a quandary over the years. And so when this all unwinds, when it does unwind, I think, yeah, absolutely, gold will probably be the last man standing, and of course silver, because there are so few alternatives in a world that has seen valuations across the board get so out of whack.
But you know, there's a subtle nuance we should put on Gibson's paradox. You briefly touched on it. The key takeaway is real interest rates. In other words, you know, not this phony baloney nominal number that we see tossed around. When we bring inflation into play, the real, the true, that we all have to pay at the pump.
The $70,000 a year college tuition to the University of Michigan I'm paying right now. There is inflation, and it's just hidden in places that are things that we need, not things that we want, like color TVs and cell phones, which are really, you know, cheap and affordable for everyone to afford, but things like health care, things like energy, things like college tuition, things like insurance. Those things are inflating, and when the real inflation hits the system, when it leaves the financial system and falls into the real economy, yeah, I think people will understand very quickly why they've owned precious metals all these years. But it's also important to note one thing, too, Chris. While a lot of us claim to be inflationists, there are some people who would believe that this will be the greatest deflation ever seen, guys like Harry Dent. But I'll simply say this, I don't agree with him. But I will say that gold has proven perhaps to be the finest store of value in a deflation as well, because it is the only asset, one of the.
It protects your purchasing.
It does, because it's not someone else's, simultaneously someone else. So whether we see inflation or deflation, for people not to have an allocation to gold and silver right now, when the handwriting is so clearly on the wall that something's going down, whether it be inflation, deflation, currency collapse, market collapse, whatever it may be, you must have an allocation to gold.
Let's insert a few others there. A global trade war. Tariffs like we haven't seen since Smoot Hawley and the Great Depression. For the everyday listener, we could possibly be switching to the risk off. And when I say risk off, I mean priced to perfection, as they call it on Wall Street, world, to the even slightly risk on a 10-watt bulb. I mean, heaven help us if we go to a risk full-on floodlight scenario, which, by the way, can happen at any time. Especially given now that folks are no longer buying like mad to front run the trade tariffs, and now the hangover from the big party could be upon us. This really could be a risk on environment, in which case bonds, where's the appeal there? We have higher interest rates. We have the threat of rates going up. People don't want to buy bonds. They're certainly going to be terrified of U.S. stocks, which were priced, as I said, to perfection before. So there's really very few go-to assets. And then add to all the leverage that's been, you know, just thrown on top. The return to the mean. Didn't we start off the show today with the thought of financial mathematics? The return to the mean on the upside really could be maybe a 2 or 3 standard deviation event.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, look, when you have created market anomalies and distortions to the greatest magnitude ever seen. Stock markets trading at levels never seen before. Look, people wouldn't have ever dreamed of buying stocks way back when unless they were trading at single-digit price-to-earnings ratios while paying a handsome dividend. When you push interest rates so far below what they really should be, when you manipulate all of the numbers to the degree that they have been to create perception of reality, that is, perception of wealth, an illusion of wealth, when these numbers have been massaged to the level that they have, when things correct, yes, it will be something to behold. No question about it, Chris. And I think one of the knocks against people in my industry is the doom and gloom scenario, and people always talking about the worst is yet to come. But, you know, look, even in the best of times, people should have a 10% allocation of precious metals to their portfolio. And if you can honestly sit back and think that these are anywhere near the best times, that the things that we've just touched on don't have at least a 10 or a 20% chance of happening, then you ought to at least have a commensurate position in gold and silver to your portfolio, a 10 or 20%. Quite frankly, if I were being honest, if I had a gun to my head, I would say you're going to not have a far more substantial allocation to gold and silver, and I try to be as objective as possible. If I truly felt that gold and silver were on their way out, I would tell my clients to sell and I'd find a new profession. I sleep very, very well at night, Chris, making the recommendations I do. I believe in my heart that gold and silver will have their day in the sun, and you don't have to look any further than the positioning of the most sophisticated traders on the globe, and all of the big central banks are accumulating it hand over fist right now.
You know, we have J.P. Morgan, which has arguably the ear and a direct, you might say the bat phone, right? I mean, a direct line, the Federal Reserve. They are directly in line. They know what's coming down the pike. Do you think they're taking physical delivery of crude oil and wheat and grain and pork bellies? No, they're stockpiling the stuff in their basement in New York. But there's another, I think, important point you made that I'd like to highlight, underscore, and embolden, that there are times when the 10, 15, 20% recommended, you know, the boring precious metals allocation. No institution out there, no pension institutions with the deep pockets has even half a percentage point, probably less than half of a percentage point. And that's according to our good friends up at BMG in Canada, Nick Barishev. They don't have even half a percentage of their trillions of dollars, $4 trillion, by the way, in just Tokyo alone, invested in the precious metal. Can you imagine the tsunami of funds just waiting on the sidelines, on the benches, that's going to pour into this game by the time it's over?
If that happened, which, you know, if 1% of that money flew into the gold market, you'd see prices going through the roof overnight. But what you'd really see is what we saw for the most part the last decade, save the last 2 years, from roughly 2006 or 7 through 2014 or 15, the biggest challenge that we faced was securing product. And we're one of only 27 companies ever approved by the U.S. Mint to resell their product as an authorized reseller. We're high up on the totem pole with all the major sovereign mints, Austrian, Australian, Canadian, South African. I know all of the big players in the industry. And most of my public speaking over the last decade centered around the inability to adequately source product at a period of time when most people wouldn't know gold coin if it fell on their foot. And I do really think that it's important to note that the supply chain in the physical market is pretty much controlled by five mints: U.S., Canada, South Africa, Australia, and Austria. Now, you have the Great Britain Mint and the New Zealand Mint and the Chinese Mint. Well, all of those together really don't amount to much of anything. And you have some private refineries. But when those five mints run into problem, or any of them run into problem, as we saw in 2008 when they all ran out of product simultaneously and premiums went to the moon, the biggest problem people will face will not be in escalating prices. It will be in finding anything worthwhile to actually physically own. The time to buy precious metals, or the time to buy anything, is when they're out of favor. And precious metals, let's just be honest, they've been out of favor for quite some time. You can lament that and cry about it, or you can look at it as a subsidy. As a subsidy, when a group like J.P. Morgan, who in the last decade has never had one losing, the very fact that they're now accumulating hand over fist this amount of physical should tell you they don't need the physical to make billions and billions and billions of dollars manipulating the paper price. Perhaps they're manipulating the paper price to accumulate the physical. And so the bottom line to me, Chris, is that now is the time to be considering adding to your portfolio or adjusting it from gold to silver. If you own palladium, you trade it to platinum. The distortions that we're seeing in the marketplace are creating tremendous opportunities to trade, to swap, to move things around, to reposition without spending a penny. Your listeners could call me and say, I have some palladium, I'd like to trade it to platinum. I have some gold, I'd like to trade it to silver. We'd send them boxes, UPS air bills to get it all sent back and send their stuff back. They don't have to spend a penny. There are ways to win this game without spending more money. We'd love to talk to your listeners. I can always be reached at andy@milesfranklin.com. That's my email. Our website is milesfranklin.com. And my personal 800 number is 255-1129. Accessibility is one of my strong points, Chris, and I'd like to offer that to anyone listening. If you'd like a free assessment of your position and how we can help, anyone can feel free to email me or call directly.
Folks there at Miles Franklin have certainly done a great job of repositioning my very humble piggy bank, so I've got to recommend it to our listeners today. They kind of go out of their way to make sure that you get a better than fair deal. So, I mean, you've got the security, the safety, the trust. And, you know, I've been itching to take my five-year-old to a Braves game. It's not the American League, but you can root the opposing team. There'll have to be two seats between us, no $1,200 seats, but open invitation and ticket to Andy Scheckman at a Braves game, Fulton County, buddy.
Well, you know what? If I'm ever down there, I will take that. No question about it. I think an afternoon at a ballpark is one of my favorite ways in the world to spend an afternoon, and certainly with good people, and you and your son would be at the top of that list, Chris. I do very much appreciate it, and of course, if you're ever up this way, up north, I'd like to see a Twins game, the same thing holds true, and I play golf with the cousin of the owner of the team, and so I can always get a good seat when I need one. So I do appreciate being on your show, Chris. I really do, and I'm always available if you need to check in and see what's going on this side of the table, but you do a great job, and we appreciate very much the affiliation with Gold Seek Radio.